The Morning Mystery. What's going on with oil? From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. It is the 18th of September, a Tuesday, and we'll get on to Mitt Romney and lots of other good stuff soon enough. But first off, around midday yesterday, oil prices dropped $3 in about a minute, and they've kept falling ever since. So far today, they're down about another third of a percent. Was this a computer error? Was it somebody's fat finger, as they say on Wall Street, on the button? Or is oil falling for a reason? Samuel Chishuk is a consultant with KCB Energy Economics in London. Good to talk with you.
Well, thank you for having me.
First of all, to the plunge yesterday, the fall continued today. Seriously, do you know what's going on?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are asking this question today. It was a very, very big and quick movement downwards. Some call it a correction. Some, have been saying that prices should come down a bit. We have been saying so for some time. But yeah, of course, you know, looking at the actual market movement, there's a lot of question marks. I believe we will have a lot of people looking at this and trying to investigate this from their different perspectives.
There's a lot of speculative trading that goes on in oil markets, a lot of people who are sort of just looking to make money off of what that market's doing. But tell me, what's the fundamental story with oil these days? Supply and demand, right?
Exactly. I mean, the question, you know, of how much effect speculation has still really has to be resolved. But, you know, looking at the fundamentals, we've been saying that prices should be coming down for quite some time because production has been high. OPEC is producing a lot. Particularly led by Saudi Arabia. At the same time, we've had rising production in non-OPEC, you know, led by, of course, the shale oil boom in the USA. So, there's actually no lack of oil, and it hasn't been a lack of oil during pretty much all of this year, despite sanctions on Iran, et cetera.
From my position in the business news industry, I can say that we used to, in recent years, follow the price of oil day in, day out. Seems like we've kind of lost interest more generally. Should we have?
Well, I don't think so. But then again, I'm working with it day in and day out, so maybe I'm biased in that. But it is such a fundamental commodity for the world, and I think most would agree that we're in a very volatile place right now. That, of course, is not only about oil. It is about the general economies. But, you know, I think keeping track of where things are moving is something we really can't afford to lose sight of.
Samuel Chishuk with KBC Energy Economics. Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Kind of a quiet day on Wall Street, at least in the first hours of trading. The Dow is more or less flat, as is the NASDAQ. The S&P 500 is down about a tenth of a percent. FedEx says the declining global economy will eat into its profits for the rest of the year. FedEx stock is down around 2% in trading in the first part of the day. And new numbers for July show more foreigners were seeking safety in U.S. Treasury bonds, another sign of uncertainty elsewhere in the world. Here at home, the National Association of Home Builders says the mood among people who build houses is the best it's been since 2006. Now, along with oil, the other big news today continues to be Mitt Romney. And for that, I'm going to kick to my Morning Report colleague, Jeremy Hobson.
Mitt Romney is standing by his words from a private fundraiser that were caught on videotape, though he says they were not elegantly stated. In the video, which was obtained by the liberal magazine Mother Jones, Romney says 47% of the country pay no income tax and are therefore predisposed to vote for President Obama.
All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and the government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what.
Well, that video is already dominating the political headlines, so let's get to the facts about that 47%. Robertson Williams is a senior fellow at the Tax Policy Center in Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, let's talk about this number, 47%. Is that correct? Do those people really pay no federal income taxes?
Roughly half of Americans pay no income tax. That's down a little bit from a couple of years ago when we were just slightly above 50% in 2008, 2009 at the height of the recession. And we anticipate it will fall below 40% by the end of the decade.
And who are these people who pay no taxes?
About half of them are people with incomes so low that they have absolutely no taxable income. They're low-income elderly, they're low-income working families. The other half are people who benefit from various tax preferences. They have low tax liability to begin with, and various tax preferences, things like the child credit or earned income tax credit, zero out their liability entirely.
But they do have to pay some taxes, right? I mean, isn't that a little bit deceiving that they don't pay any? I mean, they're going to pay state taxes, local taxes, payroll taxes in many cases.
Well, they say two-thirds of them pay payroll taxes because they work. Most of them will pay state income taxes or sales taxes. It's very hard to avoid tax. You buy a tank of gasoline, you pay a federal excise tax. You buy cigarettes or tobacco, you pay a federal excise tax. You fly in an airplane, you pay those excise taxes. So these people do pay taxes.
So as a tax policy expert, when you heard those words from Mitt Romney, what did you think?
I was absolutely shocked that he would use that group to target people who feel they're entitled to things. We all benefit from the tax preferences in the system, and the people who benefit most are the wealthiest Americans. Mitt Romney himself benefits hugely from the 15% preferential rate on capital gains. The difference is, if you're a low-income person with a low basic tax liability, the tax preferences, small ones that you get, will wipe out that liability entirely. If you're a very wealthy person, your basic tax liability is high, and even though you get very large tax preferences, they're not enough to zero out your tax bill.
Robertson Williams is a senior fellow at the Tax Policy Center. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
If you commuted to work this morning, how did you get there? The American Public Transportation Association says lots more of us are taking the bus or the train. Today, the APTA put out its latest transit ridership report, and CEO Michael Malanafy is here to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to talk with you.
So break it down for me. Around the country, what are you seeing?
For the sixth straight quarter, we're seeing great ridership increases in public transportation across the country. We're seeing big increases in heavy rail, light rail, commuter rail, bus, demand response, even trolley buses. What we're seeing across the country is as jobs are coming back, people are flocking to transit and using that as their mode of transport.
It seems to me there might also be another effect here, which is in tough economic times, people are looking for more affordable ways to get around. So they may be using the bus instead of their cars. Do you expect people are going to dip away from transit as the economy continues to get better?
Well, Jeff, it's a great question. Certainly as gas prices rose, it drives people to try transit. And we saw huge swings in gas prices, obviously a lot of volatility. Gas prices are a double-edged sword for public transit operators because they also use fuel. And so while more people are coming to transit, their budgets are being strained as well. Fully 80% of our systems across the country have either raised fares, cut service, or done both. But the good story here is that as people try transit, when they go to it because of gas prices, they try it and they stay. Gas prices fell 50 cents in the second quarter, yet transit ridership continued to go up. The other thing I think is really important to touch on is last year there were 28 local tax elections for transit, and 22 of those passed. It's a 79% passage rate in one of the toughest economic times in our country.
Okay, so clearly you're an advocate for transit. We're hearing a lot of positive things from you. Is there anything, though, that you are concerned about?
Well, what's a positive is the Congress passed MAP 21, a two-and-a-half-year national transportation bill. So we have some stabilized funding for a 27-month period. But we have a need to invest in infrastructure across this country. Many of our transit systems are aging, and we've got to make a big investment in state of good repair so that we can make sure we've got safe, reliable capacity for people to ride these systems as more and more of them get back into the workforce and ride transit to get to work.
Michael Malanafy, President and CEO of the American Public Transportation Association. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and have a great day.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
As we wrap up here, interesting bit of news for Star Trek fans, or really anybody, I guess, who'd like to get far away from the planet Earth. Building a warp drive might be quite a bit easier than we thought. So here's the trick. Physicists, listen up. If you're able to bend the space-time continuum with a shell around your spaceship shaped like a donut, you might be able to travel 10 times the speed of light. And in case you think I'm wasting your time with some wacko theory here, this was NASA sharing this insight at an interstellar spaceflight symposium on Friday. And finally, yesterday, some of you, quite a few of you, not surprisingly and quite justifiably, wrote into us because during a lighthearted item about the British Prime Minister's cat, I referred to the PM as James Cameron. Now, I don't know. I did like Titanic an awful lot. Avatar 2, I suppose. Honestly, I have no good excuse for that. Neither does my editor, who apparently also thinks that all Camerons are basically the same. Anyway, I apologize for the error. We're going to set things straight. The Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is, of course, Kirk Cameron. I think I got that right. Glad we took care of it. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.